What is Demystifying Research? Hosted by me, Kelly Harris.
And me, Katherine Hoyt.
Demystifying Research is a space where we dialogue on training, careers, and all things research.
Everything from is research right for me to thinking about applications, mentorship, which research degree is right for me, handling failure and rejection, CVs versus resumes, and funding. This is a space where we engage in discussions around the questions we all have or have had when considering a career in research and science.
As clinician scientists, we seek to answer questions and address issues that aren't clearly addressed in more formal spaces, things that weren't addressed in our clinical training, questions that we may not know how or where to begin to seek answers. This is not a space only for scientists and researchers, but for anyone who may be interested in science and research. We're so glad you've joined us. Let's dive in.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is First Fridays for OT Research. I'm Kelly Harris. I am an assistant professor at Washington University School of Medicine in the program in occupational therapy. I study chronic disease and youth, so pediatric chronic disease and school-based services and school-based supports. So just a little bit about what First Fridays is, and then I'm going to pass it to Katherine Hoyt, my co-host, to introduce herself. First Fridays is a space where we really talk about all things research, everything from is research right for me, how do I apply to a program, mentorship, and managing failure. So it's a space that where we engage in discussions around questions we all have or have had when considering a career in research and science. As clinician scientists, we seek to answer questions and address issues that aren't clearly addressed in more formal spaces. So things that maybe weren't addressed in our clinical training or questions that we may not know how or where to begin seeking answers. So this is not only a space for scientists and researchers, but for anyone who might be interested in science and research. So we're so glad that you've joined us, and I'm going to pass it to you, Catherine.
Kelly. So my name is Katherine Hoyt. I'm an instructor at Washington University and early intervention and occupational therapist, and my research is focused on early identification of developmental delay, specifically in young children with sickle cell disease or those who have experienced a perinatal stroke. And today we're going to be discussing all things conferences. So both Kelly and I are at different conferences, and we're excited to tell you about them and how we manage those. So I'm at the American Occupational Therapy Association. And Kelly, do you want to share where you're at?
Sure. I am at the Faculty Women of Color and the Academy Conference in DC, well, in Arlington, in the kind of DC, Virginia area.
I'm in San Antonio, Texas. So we're presenting and networking. And one of those things that I'm really excited about is today, in that networking at conferences, I was able to bring along Dr. Christina Reyes Smith, right next to me, who's on the board of directors for the American Occupational Therapy Association and has a lot of, I think, good advice on how to attend conferences, things that we should know and do and think about when we're considering going to conference for the first time or what conference to go to, things like that. So I don't know, Christina, do you want to say anything else about yourself?
I'm on faculty with the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we are glad you can join us. And it's kind of an example of what can happen at a conference and that, you bump into people and you get invited to join us on this talk. So I'm excited that you're here. It's a pleasant surprise. So let's start with, we already kind of said where we are. Let's talk a little bit about the conferences, because not only are we at two different conferences, but they're two different types of conferences, I would say. Maybe not, I don't know. Do you want to go first, Catherine?
Sure. So we are at the American Occupational Therapy Association annual conference. Every year it's in a different place, somewhere around the United States. And that the conference is hosted by our professional association. So this conference may be different. We'll hear from you, Kelly, about what your conference is about. But this one is really focused on the field of occupational therapy, not necessarily research focused, but there is research here. But there's a lot of resources to support clinicians and students and people interested in the field of occupational therapy. So there's like maybe like 1,000 posters and many, many concurrent sessions going on different topics with people that are presenting about their clinical experiences or things that they've done to advance the profession or in their professional life. And there's also a huge expo that has, it's called the Expo, and like different vendors have booths to advertise textbooks or things that people can use in their clinical practice, like assistive technology and things like that. And I'd say, I don't know, Christina, do you have anything else about AOTA that you would say, like what this conference is?
Absolutely. So the name of the AOTA conference is now Inspire. And that's really the concept behind it. I still remember my first time being a conference attendee. I was a student in Charlotte, North Carolina, presenting a poster for the first time around dance movement therapy for older adults. And I remember exactly how I felt, the intimidation, the overwhelming feelings, but also just the awe of the magnitude of our profession, the depth, the breadth, the robustness of so much that we have to offer within our various areas of specialty, but also as a cohort across not only our country, but across the world as well. And I, as a student, I did not get that sense until coming to conference. And it was love. It became a passion. I was a clinician for several years, and so I didn't always have the funds. I was able to attend the state conferences and more local conferences and be involved. And also with presenting, having some of those early experiences was really helpful for building confidence, competence, and establishing a line of scholarship and research. So now a lot of my work has been around pediatric health disparities, but also promoting workforce diversity, holistic admissions, and other I feel are very important contributions and areas for growth for our profession. But it's a conference where thought leaders are available. They're in the elevators. Just this morning, I was talking to our MC. Yesterday morning, the president, we were talking on an escalator. And I remember, now I'm on the board, so I've met these people before. It's not quite as intimidating. But early on, people were here. And especially if it's someone that has the same interests and passion that you have, they are often very excited to connect with younger practitioners, to hear what are the fresh ideas, what are the needs on the front lines in academic programs, in the clinics, in the research field. And so conference is kind of a great equalizer in a way, although not everyone can afford to come. I'm so thrilled that now we're able to offer a virtual conference through AOTA. So it is accessible to anyone who's able to get some funding together, whether it's fundraising, sponsorship, or just out of pocket. So yeah, I love conference, and I'm really excited for everyone to participate this year.
So I think that's a major thing about AOTA is like, it's a great place to network and to meet other people in our profession because it is such a big conference. But I suspect that's different than the conference that you're at, Kelly. Do you want to share a little bit about what your conference is like?
Sure. So I'm at the Faculty Women of Color in the Academy Conference, and I see it as kind of a career development conference. And for me, not necessarily for everyone that's here, this is my third time attending, but it's my first time in person because we've been virtual the past 2 years. And so a senior scholar kind of recommended this to me, being a woman of color in the Academy, thinking that it might be a good, you know, kind of supportive space for me to, you know, as career development, kind of as training. And I think that is really what it is. So it's a place where there are all women of you know, various backgrounds, but typically those that are really underrepresented in, you know, academic institutions. And so there is research here for sure. A lot of our presentations, it's kind of a mix of research presentations around topics of diversity and equity in academia, and then also really like kind of self-care and how do you navigate leadership in, you know, academic circles? How do you navigate environments? How do you balance, like, you know, thinking about work-life balance and kind of mental health and making sure that we are kind of bringing our full selves to our jobs, but also in a way that is sustainable and healthy. And so I think, you know, the variety of topics covered is really broad, but it's more of a, I see it as kind of like a nourishing conference that really gets me, kind of keeps me excited about my work and how to, and helps me network, right? Because it's not field specific. So I'm actually exposed to people that are not doing things, anything similar to what I'm doing, right? And so I think you can learn a lot about strategies and just different, you know, things that we don't talk about necessarily in the same circles we're in our departments every, you know, on a regular basis. So that's where I am. A unique kind of feature of this conference is that there is a writing retreat that's always either at the front end or the back end that you can register for. Michelle Boyd with Inkwell does that, and she's excellent. If you are struggling in your writing ever, I would always recommend her writing retreats. But she does like a half day or a full day writing retreat. And so that's actually where I was this morning. And it's awesome. I mean, it just kind of helps she helps you kind of think about your own writing process, where you might get stuck in that process and how to get out of that, how to kind of, you know, understand that process, understand where you are, accept it and embrace it as your process, regardless of, you know, how good or bad you might think it is, right? And then to kind of push through and keep going. So that's where I just came from. And that I think we all need that kind of encouragement. I think the thing that stuck with me that she said is that writing is hard, and that we then work in environments that make every aspect of writing harder, right? The natures of our work, it does. And so like, we really have to kind of tend to ourselves and that process. And so that's my morning takeaway. But that's where I am. So I'm at the Faculty of Women of Color in the Academy Conference, and it's a much smaller conference, which I think is also nice for the networking, because it's just different. There are vendors and things like that here, but again, it's not field specific. So like, I bought earrings this morning. Oh, you can't see them because of my blur. But anyway, that was fun, right? So anyway, that's where I am.
About what size is your conference? Sorry, Christina.
You know, I'm not exactly sure, because it's hybrid. So like, even in the writing retreat this morning, there were people virtual and then people in their room. So I'm not, it's small though. It's small, well, smaller relative. Like, how big is AOTA?
Like 5 to 10,000.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like I will guess and be really wrong, but it's smaller than that, I would say. I think, yeah.
That maybe ties to our next question, though, like different types of conferences. Sorry, Christina.
Do you mind if I just about what you were talking about earlier? There were three things that kind of came to mind from some of the sessions. We actually just came out of a leadership session by our past president, Dr. Amy Lam. And one of the things that I'd never heard before is work-life integration.
Yes.
Versus work-life balance. And I thought that was really innovative. And so I'm still kind of processing it. But that whole idea, it's not really scales. It's more making it work together in a way that is sustainable for us. Second thing, you talked a little bit about self-care and the importance of that. Yesterday, we had a great panel about resilience. And I posed the question about self-care. You know, can you talk about that? Because we as occupational therapists, we are so empathetic to a fault. And it leads to burnout. It leads to sometimes people leave the workforce. I see people's health impacted by it because of the stress, the anxiety that we take on, because we care so much about others, but often it's to our own detriment. And so we hear self-care, and of course we think about the ADLs, but I think we need more dialogue about what does it mean to care for yourself? What does it mean to take vacations, to do your yoga, to mindfulness, meditation, nutrition and exercise, all these things that we love to preach to our clients when we are often at fault and negligent with regard to that. And then the other thing that I want to mention, you talked a little bit about kind of alluding to that imposter syndrome aspect, where often we'll feel like we don't belong there, we don't deserve this, someone else could do this better, when the reality is, and I remember hearing during COVID early on, you have the best skill set and expertise and experience to do what you're doing right now, more than anyone else, because you're there and you're going to pivot, you're going to adapt to the best that anybody could do. And that was really meaningful to me. And our keynote speaker yesterday talked about how she's trying to rebrand imposter syndrome to be the real deal syndrome. And she said, if you feel that way, that you feel intimidated, scared, and anxious, you're doing the right thing. You are reaching out, you are stepping out, you are moving forward. And the more meaningful it is, often the more anxiety you may get about it. So I just wanted to share that with you.
I do think that is like thinking about the real deal syndrome instead. Like, going to a conference can be intimidating because they can be so big, or, you know, there's, you know, people doing all kinds of stuff that you haven't heard of. And I do think this still ties into like the next thing we wanted to talk about, like what are conferences and what are the different types and who are you going to see and what are you doing there? So we're just talking about kind of big conferences, but, you know, in June, I'm going to attend one that is max 200 people. So why do we go to conferences? Like Kelly, you had mentioned networking and some like very practical things like writing. I don't know if either of you have other like reasons or motivators for attending a conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think we go, so like, you know, there's some conferences I go to really that are about presenting, about one, disseminating, sharing my own work, and then learning from, you know, all the other folks that are doing great work, right? And then there are conferences like this one where I'm, you know, my goal here is to kind of get the answers that you don't get in other places, right? The how you negotiate various things talk, or the how you navigate challenging circumstances, or, you know, how, like, things to think about if you're considering leadership, that kind of thing. The other thing I did mention, you made me think of it, Christina, was that like some of the things that some of the sessions here are meditation. There's like, there's a performance group that's here every year that does, you know, that. So, but I mean, that's, I go, I think it depends on the conference, kind of why I'm going, right? Like sometimes it's for that academic nourishment. Sometimes it's for that kind of personal nourishment. Yeah. And sometimes it's because, you know, we must go and we must present. That is part of the job. And it's fun and it's great. I don't mean that in a negative way. It is just something that we're supposed to be doing. If, you know, if we're doing the work, why are we not sharing it with our colleagues, right?
And sometimes it's a little arduous because it's so stressful. There's so much preparation that goes into it. But once we're in the moment with like-minded individuals and really establishing that synergy and sharing with others, hearing their ideas, it can be very energizing at conference. And I tend to forget that at times. So I try to be mindful of it's coming. Put in the work. It's coming.
That's such an important point. I do feel like I don't think I've ever left a conference not inspired about some new idea that relates to my work, or some new person that I've heard talk that I'm like, ooh, I need to like know them and I want to work with that person. Or I don't think I've ever been not inspired at some point, right? So I think that's key. Sometimes we go just for the inspiration.
And excitement. So I was thinking, I'm often inspired, but also even this morning I connected with a student at a university that I never, like on the West Coast, probably never would have met this person otherwise. But I'm so excited about the future for this OT profession, and like meeting this like future OT leader is exciting to me. And I really hope they reach out and we get to continue our relationship into the future. So it's, I guess that's also inspiring, but I'm also just generally excited.
Yeah.
Go ahead. For newer people, especially students, newer practitioners, I really encourage them to dress for confidence. Sometimes the inclination is to dress for comfort, but I found early on I felt like a student and I felt less than. And if I just dressed a little bit nicer, a little more professionally, that it really helped with my confidence. And there's that whole fake it till you make it, which is ridiculous, but it works. Sometimes if you smile, even if you don't feel like smiling, eventually it comes a little more naturally. And I think confidence is the same way. And a lot of times that intimidation is what can cause us to have a more negative experience. So if we're mindful of just, I remember being working in a new practice setting. I'd been practicing in pediatrics for 3 years, and I started doing some inpatient adult PRN work. And I told myself, I am confident and competent. And that was my mantra in the back of my head the entire time. And eventually I started feeling it. So I think it's a helpful strategy for us when coming to conference or when trying anything new.
So thinking about that, I feel like we're talking about students. When should people go to conference?
I think as soon as you can, right? You know, most, I think, I don't know if most is fair, but a lot of PhD programs provide some kind of funding for students. It may not be a lot, and it often doesn't support more than one conference, but I think make use of it. I am a firm believer if you get support for something, you should make use of it. It's there for a reason. Why leave it, right? So that's my thought.
Along those lines, faculty should be supporting their students participating in conference at the state level, at the national level, helping with fundraising if they're able to, helping to advocate for sponsorship of departmental funding, maybe even providing continuing education. In particular, students from disadvantaged backgrounds who may have a harder time getting to conference, faculty can be champions to help. And as I mentioned earlier, the conference experience is so enriching for us. And the earlier that we can be exposed to it, the more of an impact it can make on our career. I tell the students, if you graduate when you're 25 and you retire when you're 65, that's 40 years of career where anything can happen in 40 years. And so I know for me that conference and the association, the relationships, the friends that I've been able to make, I mean, just being able to hug somebody's neck has been so meaningful here at conference for me. You can't get that on Zoom. So I encourage folks, and you know, if there is a conference that you think should be happening and it's not, make it happen. Be a part of the change you wish to see. You can start a small conference for your program or your class or your social group or for your area of interest with your state. Your state association would love for you to help to initiate conferences or to help develop the conferences that they're doing right now. But this is how, as a collective, we can help to move our profession forward so that we can be strong, powerful into the future. We're still living out the centennial vision. We're still moving towards vision 2025. And then whatever's going to come after that, we're doing it together. So on that note, I have to run for the next session, but it's been so great to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And I'll see you at noon, right?
Okay. Yes, I will see you then. Okay. Bye-bye. It's a pleasure to
Christina,
meet you.
Thanks for being with us. Related to that, though, to what Christina was just saying, like what she was referring to, the Centennial Vision, for anybody who's not familiar, that's related to the American Occupational Therapy's kind of driving mission for the profession of occupational therapy for the coming years. But as you, Christina was talking about that, and you were saying that too, Kelly, I've also heard conflicting, like I've gotten conflicting advice from mentors before about attending conferences, you know, like don't present if you don't have a paper. I've heard that from a few people. And maybe you won't even get funding if you don't present. So like there's kind of that, I don't know if you've experienced that at
all. You know, so in my PhD program, we got funding. You got more funding if you were presenting, but you still got funding for a conference if you weren't presenting. Nice. And that was a message to me that if I'm not presenting, I should still be going, right? And the other thing I think it took me a long time to learn is that, you know, so there was like one big conference that my program went to every year. And that's how they framed the funding, right, for this particular conference. It was really for any conference before that conference. And I think sometimes it's good to start going early because a specific conference might not be the best place for your work, or might not be the only place for your work, or might not be the best place for certain, you know, kind of strands of your research, right? So you have to go to different conferences and kind of spread that out and try them out to see what you feel like, you know, which ones are best fits for you and your particular work. And that was something it took me a while to learn. I don't think I had a good understanding of the kind of breadth of conferences that exist, right? There are so many There's so many organizations. And so you kind of want to take a look at different ones and maybe, you know, 1 year go to this conference and another year go to try a different one out and see if, you know. And I think, you know, for some of our, so I didn't say this in my introduction, but my clinical background is as a speech pathologist, right? And so there is one main conference or kind of a couple big conferences that we go to. So I'm not saying we shouldn't do those things, but for example, so I go to the American Educational Research Association, but also the Society for Research and Child Development is, you know, a place that a lot of my work fits quite well. So just figuring that out. And then there are several others. So I think thinking about that. The other thing I was thinking about when Christina was talking was, I think my very first conference as a student, I waited till like when I was planning to go to that conference is when I joined the organization. And I didn't know how much funding there was within the organization, within like the special interest groups and various kind of sub organizations for students, right? So you can apply for travel awards to go to various conferences. And so that sometimes helps to kind of buffer that financial challenge and obstacle that conferences can be because they are expensive. And the other thing you can do is apply for like early career training, you know, mentorship programs within the conference that sometimes provide that funding.
While you were talking, I was really thinking, and like Christina's thoughts too, I attended as a student for the first time the American Occupational Therapy Association conference as an OT student, but it wasn't until I was a PhD student that I even really looked into other conferences. I did not even realize there were other occupational therapy conferences that are smaller and focused on other more specific topics. And it wasn't until I was a PhD student and I was intimidated going to conferences that included other professions. I didn't know whether my work was going to be appreciated or who I was going to talk to. It just, that's, I think, my personality. I was very shy about it. But there's so many meetings that you can go to connect with people that are doing similar work. The support is so critical. I went to the American Academy of Cerebral Palsy and Developmental Medicine and submitted a poster as a PhD student, and I got a small travel award, which supported my flight and registration, and that really helps. And the Society for Research and Child Development fits neatly. I haven't attended that conference yet, but I'm hoping to. I submitted an abstract for it, so we'll see. It's in St. Louis, so that buffers the cost to finding conferences that are close by. Yeah. But there's so many different meetings that you can find whatever your interest is as an OT or as a speech therapist. It doesn't mean that you just go to OT conferences. I do child development and research in communities that are disadvantaged in the United States. So there's specific meetings just for that. And I get to meet lots of really cool people. And yeah, I just wanted to reinforce that, I think, and think about like, it can be scary, but there's so many meetings. And Christina brought up the state meetings too. And that's actually, I think, a great way to, you know, get your foot in the door. The state meetings tend to be more affordable and you don't have to travel.
Sometimes less pressure.
Yeah, that's true too.
But yeah, so we've talked about clinical, we've talked about research conferences, we've talked about state level meetings. There are also methods conferences. So if you're interested in a particular method, I do geospatial work, there are conferences around that. So anything you can think of, I feel like there is a conference for. I mean, if there's not, as Christina said, maybe if you're interested, you should start one.
I just had another thought. Can I butt in and say it?
Yeah, sure.
Thinking about what conferences to attend, I hadn't ever considered actually until I was a PhD student, I just hadn't thought about this. Some conferences, if you submit an abstract to present a poster or a presentation, they publish that abstract, and some conferences don't. And so I think that that is just an important thing to be aware of as you're submitting that abstract. Is this abstract already published somewhere else, the exact same one? You know, maybe that's something just to think about, or if you're ready for that work to be published in that way, or maybe you're preparing a manuscript that you wanna wait a little bit until that manuscript is ready to be submitted. It's something to talk to your mentor about for sure.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing, this is, I feel like we're jumping around a little bit, but I thought of this story and I think it's, no, it's fine. I think it's helpful. One of the things I did when I was working on my PhD, and so I was, you know, in dissertation phase, and I was using a particular data set, and I had found some publications by another professor at another university who had used the same data set that I was using and in a somewhat similar way. And so leading up to the conference, I emailed them and said, hey, are you going to be at AERA? If so, can we have coffee? I'm working with this data set. I just would love to chat. And I had no idea, right? I thought, like, you know, he might, worst he can say is no, but he did. And it was an opportunity, A, to network a little bit, B, to get some advice from somebody else who had used the same data, you know, as I was getting into my dissertation kind of analysis and writing. And so it just kind of, and to, you know, I feel like you network with one person and you learn about more people, right? It's rare that you have a meeting with one person and they don't mention someone else that you might want to look at somebody else's work or, you know. So I think in terms of networking, that's another approach you can take on the front end. I think, you know, the idea of like, how do we network? What do? Right? Do you just show up at conference and start, you know, giving out your card if you even carry a card anymore, right? No, not maybe, but there are many ways to approach it. And I think that's one, right? So reaching out to a few folks before the conference to set up coffees or something like that to meet people. The other thing I was thinking about, it was advice I got at some point that was really helpful. If you're nervous about networking, thinking about like a kind of couple of key questions that you can just keep on deck for folks that you're meeting in the elevator or when you're at the, you know, grabbing coffee together at the same place or whatever. You know, things like, you know, is this your first time here? Or asking about, you know, if they're presenting something in the conference. Sometimes if there's somebody like you have in mind that you really want to meet and get to know, I mean, just asking them if you can reach out after the conference is something you can do, or asking them a little bit about, you know, kind of their story. You don't really do that in an informal setting. That's more of a set up the meeting and show up and then ask a little bit about their story. But just thinking about, you know, kind of some low key, low stress questions you can use if you're nervous on the fly is something that can be helpful.
That's a really good tip. As you were saying that, I was thinking, you know, if I'm planning to meet with somebody, I'll maybe Google them and, you know, look at a couple of their things that they've published or something, so I can comment on it if it's a planned meeting. But I was a very, very nervous networker. And one of the things I did as a PhD student, knowing that this is something that is an important part of a research and science career, is networking and finding those people that you can collaborate with. And are you at WashU, anyways, where we are, they offer a free etiquette dinner. And so as a PhD student, I was the only graduate student, I think, in it. It was mostly undergrads, but it was free and I did it. And it actually made me feel a little bit more confident in my networking skills. Like just some small tips, like, you know, I put my badge on my left side. So when you shake with your right hand, you can like see my badge and my name. And, you know, it's nothing I ever would have known. Or, you know, how do I hold a cocktail plate? I don't know, you know, and things like that. So I'm not recommending necessarily that everybody needs to do that specifically, but finding whatever strategies, what makes you maybe anxious or insecure, or what you're thinking about preparing for that conference, and then finding something. There's always someone, a mentor, a person. Reach out to someone and say, like, what should I do when I get there? I know this conference actually has like first timers meetings that you can attend, and like, it's an informal way to get to know some of the leaders, and they know it's your first time at conference. And so they help set you up for success.
Yep. I think that's great advice. The other thing I was thinking when you said that is that, you know, a conversation with your mentor on the front end, hey, who should I, you know, is there anybody I should meet while I'm at this conference, or anybody I should reach out to? And some mentors will literally walk you around and introduce you to important people. And, you know, which is wonderful, right? That's like, never say no to those opportunities. And some mentors won't do that much, but they'll tell you, you know what, you might really want to go to this particular session. And if you have a chance afterwards to talk to this speaker, then do, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Actually, was some of the most valuable conference advice I've ever gotten, was don't go to the session based on the topic necessarily, go based on the speaker. So if there's a speaker that's doing work that you're interested in, you know, whatever they're talking about, it'll probably be interesting, but it gives you an opportunity to connect with them afterwards, or shake their hand, introduce yourself, hand over a business card if you still have one.
Yep. So true. So let's see, what have we not covered?
I don't know. We've talked about funding. We've talked about different types of meetings.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing I was thinking about, when we think about logistics, you know, conferences throw so much at you and you can't go to everything. So how do you pick what you go to? And I think if you're going not alone, so if there's multiple people in your program going, then you approach it as a team. That's what we've done before. Like, I really want to go to both of these things. Oh, so do I. Okay, you go to that one. I'm going to go to this one, and we can, like, you know, share information. So that's one approach. But then also, like you said, going for the speaker, not necessarily just the subject matter. And then always kind of keeping a backup. That's what I would do. Take time with that conference, you know, whether it's an app or whatever kind of conference schedule program they give you. Plan time on your flight while you're waiting at the airport, dinner the night before, to kind of go through and think about, what is my day tomorrow going to look like? What are my must go to's? I'd really like to, but I'll skip it if I'm tired, you know, that kind of thing. So that you have a sense. So just to kind of organize, put a little time to that on the front end.
That's good advice. I know students do lots of things too, to make it more affordable, like get Airbnb or, you know, travel together.
Yeah, as a student, I always traveled with folks and shared a room and figured that out. But if you really want to go to a conference, I think going by yourself is fine too. I think that can be intimidating.
I've definitely gone to conferences by myself, but it's fun when you have people to go with.
For sure.
Thank you for joining us today. Check out our other episodes to hear more. You can find the first season on YouTube under Washington University Program and Occupational Therapies channel under the First Fridays for OT Research playlist.
And more episodes of Demystifying Research linked under the Research tab on the Washington University OT webpage at ot.wustl.edu. That's ot.wustl.edu. Send us your ideas for future episodes at demystifyingresearch@wustl.edu.